You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Intuitively, we have a sense of when we're in an urban setting that promotes our well-being. The combination of neighborliness, livability, and a healthy physical environment makes a big difference to our experience. But the way we build our cities and neighborhoods also affects our physical health. A recent report by Smart Growth BC looks at some of these relationships. Promoting public health through smart growth examines how our built environment shapes our transportation choices and, in turn, human health. I'm joined by Chi-Ying Ho, the executive director of Smart Growth BC. Hi, Chi-Ying.
Hi, Lorraine.
How did the report go about studying how land use policies and transportation options correlate with health outcomes?
Well, the report is mainly a collection of existing research that's been done in North America, and unfortunately most of it so far is from the United States. We're hoping to do some more original research in Canada, but most of the data is from some American studies with a little bit of research from Canadian studies. And basically, we looked at the research that shows how our built environment impacts transportation and travel behavior and how that in turn impacts our physical health and mostly physical activity and obesity.
So it was done by sort of looking at other studies that actually look at these all these different kind of aspects and specifically find correlations with health?
Yes, exactly. So most of it was done around physical activity and obesity, but we also looked at water quality, noise impacts, traffic safety, air quality, and social cohesion.
Why is transportation pattern such an important factor in determining the health of populations?
Well, how we move around for our daily needs, whether it's going shopping or taking the kids to school or going to work, really impacts our physical activity for the day. Most people don't have a lot of time to incorporate extra physical activity or recreation into the daily lifestyles. And when you live in a development that is low density and segregated, where uses are segregated and there is no choice but to drive everywhere, you just don't get a chance to be physically as active as environments where you're able to walk or bike around.
What did the report discover about the impacts on human health that could be related to, say, car use versus transit use versus self-propelled transportation?
Well, the report finds that in environments where the majority of travel is done by car use, you are less physically active, and there is direct evidence now showing that even controlling out for eating behaviors and eating habits and diet, the report does demonstrate that there is a link, there's a definite correlation between more sprawling development patterns, less physical activity, and increased rates of obesity.
Does traffic safety come into that as well?
Yeah. Traffic safety, what the report showed is that in more urban, denser environments, there may be higher incidences of traffic crashes, but the severity of the traffic crashes is much lower than in lower density, sprawling, more suburban-type developments, because traffic speeds tend to be higher, and when there are accidents, they tend to be more severe, and there are higher rates of death.
Can you go into a little bit more depth about the way in which urban areas are developed, things like density and connectivity, how that affects the activity level of residents?
Well, that's a good question, Lorraine. We found that it's not just density that impacts how people can walk or bike or get out of cars. So density is an important factor, but the other two important factors are mix of uses and connectivity. So, for example, even if you have a very high-density residential development that's in the middle of nowhere with no connection to shops, retail, or work, then people will still have to drive. So there has to be a mixture of uses so that people can walk or bike or take the bus to access one need or another. And same as connectivity, really need to have connected access for people walking and biking and transit, because if, for example, if all the streets ended in cul-de-sacs, it would take a long time to walk from one cul-de-sac that feeds into a slightly larger road that feeds into a larger road before you can get anywhere. So it's really important to have connections for people to walk in the shortest distance possible so that they will actually walk.
So the trick there is kind of making it attractive to do some of your activities by actually walking or biking from point A to point B rather than doing sort of a long car trip, say, to a mall.
Yes, exactly. We found that the mixture of retail uses, for example, will attract people to walk the most. Even though mix and connectivity and density are the most important factors, urban design is really important as well. So we need to have wide sidewalks for people to feel comfortable walking, safe crosswalks, simple things like awnings in front of streets so that people don't get wet if it's raining, well-designed bus stops so people can have a place to sit and be sheltered from rain so they will take the bus. So urban design factors are really important as well.
I was intrigued in looking through the report about some of the developments in Portland, because I know they did some of the study there of the quality of the pedestrian environment, and they even talked about something called pedestrian environment factors, PEFs. Is that that what you're talking about, or is that?
Yes. People are, and Dr. Larry Frank, who was the one of the authors of the report, has done a lot of research around pedestrian factors, but that is exactly what we're talking about. Things like having art on the street, so it's interesting for people to look at, and benches for people to sit down when they're tired. So all those things that make it inviting and interesting and attractive for people to walk.
Are there differences in what promotes health across the population in terms of, say, age or class, for instance?
As you know, and probably all our listeners know, we have an aging demographic in Canada, and so it's going to become increasingly important that we think about access for senior citizens. So what makes a healthy environment maybe for an older population would include things like a mixed-use center where people can walk to healthcare facilities or walk to the library, and everything is more wheelchair accessible and just easier to get up and down stairs and things like that.
What about younger people?
For younger people, what we've looked at is that it's very important to have playgrounds and park spaces for kids in schools and stuff so that they don't have to be driven somewhere, so that they can play around. It's easy to walk to the end of the block and access a swing set or something like that. So, and then getting to school as well, we all know that traffic around schools now is becoming a big problem as parents always have to drive their kids to school. And part of that is a result of fear that kids might get hit or there's dangers associated with kids walking or biking alone. But what's happening is that often this increased traffic around schools is actually causing more danger for kids trying to get to school. So we need to have more safe routes to school and programs such as the walking school bus, where parents take turns walking a bunch of kids to school. Those are really great programs, and it also, not only does it help encourage environment of safety for kids, but it also instills a pattern of physical activity early on in kids' lives instead of getting kids used to being in the car all the time.
I'm interested in the concept of mixed use, because I understand that the wisdom at one point was to kind of completely separate uses out, so you would have, well, maybe you would mix up residential and recreational, but it was thought that industrial should be separated from that, and you know, commercial, you sort of had your kind of shopping area that was separate. What did you find out about how those things correlate with having a healthy community?
Yes, and in fact, that's where our zoning rules came from, is to mainly to separate noxious activities like industrial polluting factories from residences. But that was done. That type of zoning was created early in the 20th century, so now it's not as relevant in many cities as we move towards a new economy and as technology has really improved our pollution control. So, for example, on Granville Island, we have a cement factory mixed in with shops and residences and the Emily Carr School as well. So it's not as much of an issue anymore to separate zones. I'm not to say that zoning isn't necessary at all, but it's become more of a problem than anything now, because we still have the zoning that separates uses, and as a result, so many of our communities are built where residences are zoned in one area, retail is zoned in another area. Light industry, which is mainly office, office parks, is zoned in another area, and that segregates uses, and often these areas are separated by large roads, which forces people to drive again. So we need to have more mixed-use zones so that we can mix residences, shops, business, all in the same neighborhood and even on the same street.
Yeah, not to entirely take that at face value. I imagine there must be downsides to certain kinds of mixing up industrial with residential. Because I live on the east side, where you get there's some kind of glue factory, or you know, things in chicken factories and fish factories and stuff. So you can get some pretty intense things as well as toxic things. So what would be the health cons of having industry mixed in with residential uses?
Well, for those type of situations, there is definitely an advantage to separating some of the uses. However, they can, in the east side, and I live there as well, so I know exactly the smells you're talking about. More important is not so much the separation, is really the environmental controls and the regulations. There is technology to control those things now, and they're just not being enforced. So that's more the issue than the segregation.
What would a health promoting urban form look like? Can you suggest, aside from Granville Island, some areas that would be mixed use, that would be accessible to to people who weren't moving into some dream community?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can definitely point to some neighborhoods around Greater Vancouver that have done a really good job of mixing residences with the shops and work and recreational space and access to bike routes and transit. So West 4th and Kitsilano is really good, Commercial Drive, Lonsdale in North Vancouver. Downtown New Westminster is really trying to build the residences and bring people back into downtown to live and work, so they're really working on revitalizing their downtown core. North Burnaby area along Hastings has a real vibrant mix of homes and shopping and work. So lots of municipalities are doing a great job about mixing the uses and providing transit and bike and walk facilities, but there still needs to be a lot done in the Lower Mainland and all through BC.
The report also, North Hastings also has that fabulous Helen's Grill swinging woman's sign, which I think, I'm sure that improves people's health just walking by that, I think.
Yeah,
so anyway.
Yeah, it really is attractive, a really attractive environment, so people want to walk.
Yeah. The report also talks about how smart growth has benefits in terms of creating social capital. Can you define what that means, social capital, and say what it means in terms of our health?
Yeah, several famous authors have talked about it. Jane Jacobs has, Robert Putnam. Robert Putnam has actually said for every hour increase in driving per day reduces your ability or your desire to volunteer by 10%, something like that. So he has actually quantified it. And what we have found is that the results are mixed. Many people prefer living in the quieter suburban cul-de-sacs, for example, because there's less traffic and it tends to be quieter and kids can play at the end of the street. So those elements we need to take when we're designing any community, not the cul-de-sacs, but the safety aspect. But other research has really shown that people do feel quite isolated when they're living in an environment where the only way they can get around is by car. So it really does isolate people who can't afford to have a car or choose not to drive to get around. They have no other way of getting around. And it's difficult to just bump into somebody on the street, whereas our more vibrant, mixed-use and denser environments, you walk down the street and you're always bumping to someone you know. It's easy to go get a coffee somewhere without having to jump in a car. You can take your dog for a walk and talk to other people on the street. So the social isolation factor is becoming more of a concern.
So what we talk about as social capital then is those things that are as sort of daily and prosaic as talking to your neighbors and people at shops. And is that what we're calling social capital?
Yes, and it can directly correlate to volunteerism as well, the amount of time people do spend volunteering at a nonprofit or a charitable organization or a community organization.
And what are the health impacts of having good social capital?
the health, well...
Or I should, you know, the health benefits, I guess.
We didn't look at that too much, but some of the research is showing that it does directly translate to a longer life because people are happier if they're able to interact with more people and volunteer and just know what people who live around them in the community.
Now, the report's full of specific recommendations to create healthier communities and better urban areas. What can people do to promote this whole approach and to influence the local planning processes?
Well, the things that Smart Growth BC always encourages is for people to get a better understanding of how land development processes work in their community and really get involved in neighborhood plans that go on in their community and be up to speed on what the local government is planning. So, for example, if they're planning a type of development that doesn't enhance community or healthy communities, then get involved and propose alternatives and really encourage local government planners and engineers and elected officials to plan and design the communities that are really conducive for walking, healthy interactions, biking, better transit, and a mixture of uses. A lot of municipalities right now are doing a good job about putting in recreational facilities, so bike trails and things like that. So that's really great, but part of the problem with that is these bike trails, for example, tend to... be only for recreation, so you can't take them to go to work, for example. So while these recreational facilities are really important, it's as important to have this type of infrastructure and facilities integrated within the community as well so that people can actually use them to access things, not only to recreate.
Well, thanks for talking with me this morning, Jiang.
Well, thanks, Lorraine. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun for me, too.
Okay, have a good day.
Take care. I've been speaking with Chi-Ying Ho, the Executive Director of Smart Growth BC, and the report, Promoting Public Health Through Smart Growth, is available on their website. And to get to their website, you can get a direct link from our website, which is cooperadio.org/redeye.